Perfect.
But I can't hear. The name is.
Okay, Richie's here. We can begin. Problem is that Baba Josh isn't here. And we're starting with a Mishnah. I don't know whether the president has practiced overnight or not. He's coming. All right, he's coming. Okay. We're holding on. Today's daf is daf Yud Gimel. The Mishnah begins right at the bottom of Yud Beis on the base. Kol haro'il l'mizbeach, v'lo l'berek habayit, v'lo l'mizbeach, lo l'mizbeach v'lo l'berek habayit, mo'alim bo. And we know that there's two stages, and basically, that are involved in Me'ilah. There's the Hegdash per se, there's the Hagdashah, the fact of the dedication, and then there's the fact that Hegdash owns what it was that was dedicated. And we know that the ownership per se is clearly insufficient to create the state of Me'ilah, curiously enough, because we already saw when we give something to the Mizbeach, and it had been dedicated for actual use on the Mizbeach, wasn't given for its domim to the Mizbeach. We saw yesterday that we spoke about, let's say, an animal that produces milk. We're over there, since the animal was given to the Mizbeach, the milk, although clearly it's owned by Hegdash, being a tosseret of an animal owned by Hegdash, there is no din of Me'ilah, because the Hegdash that was made was initially a Hagdashah that would not be suited for the Mizbeach if it were Chalaf instead of the actual animal. Which means that we're used to thinking about Me'ilah as sort of an embezzlement or simply a misuse of funds, but that's insufficient. It needs to be an actual act of desecration of some element of Kedusha that was given for a purpose and now no longer will serve that purpose. That purpose could be money initially. I give it to you to use its money. Then, indeed, the embezzlement of the funds becomes the act of Me'ilah. But let us not confuse Me'ilah with simple ownership. Therefore, says the Mishnah, and in a sense the Mishnah we had yesterday is an introduction to this concept, that things that are ra'ui for the Mizbeach in their own goof, so they're an animal, and they're not usable for Berek HaBayis, or perhaps something that is usable for Berek HaBayit in its own goof. Let's say you give a stone. That stone could be used for building the walls of the Beit HaMikdash or for cutting into the tiles or whatever. But it could not be used on the Mizbeach. Or suppose it's something that's not usable in its goof, lo l'mizbeach v'lo l'berek HaBayit, you would still be mo'el ba if that was the initial intent. So that, ketzad. Let's say Hikdish Bor Malemai. Somebody gives over now to Hegdash a well, essentially. Now he doesn't actually give over water that's usable for the Mizbeach in this case, because even though there was water put on the Mizbeach, that water is only the water that is specifically taken out of the Shiloach and brought back in, so it's certainly not a Mizbeach water in this. It's not roy for the Mizbeach. On the other hand, you could use this water for making cement, to be working on the walls, and so on. So the actual guf hamayim, in this case, would be suitable for the walls, for the Berek HaBayit, even though it's not roy le Mizbeach. And you could have a case in which you give an ashpa that was melei odzevel. You give that a compost pile. And it's already now composting. Now you can't use the ashpa itself, obviously. You can't use the compost itself for the Berek HaBayit, but you could use its value, which means that initially it was given for value. Or let's say you give a shovach that is now maleyonim. You have an actual building, which is the shovach, it's the dovkot itself, plus you have the doves that are in it. Now, in that case, we don't say that it would be worthwhile to cut apart this building and use its stones, because that's more of a hefset, and therefore it's not omed to be used for the Berek HaBayit. On the other hand, the yonim are suitable in that case for the Mizbeach, and the value of the actual stones of the Shovach of those days were made of stone, like our vision of a birdhouse, or you have an Ilan, and this Ilan is Molei Perot. It's full of Perot. Now we could assume that this Ilan would be, let's say, maybe as Rashi's Rebbe said, a Geffen. It would actually be a vine, in which case it would be Roy LeMizbeach. It's not Roy LeBerek HaBayit, even though it's wood, but nonetheless, as Rashi points out, assuming it would be referring to a vine, you don't use vines for wood. The wood is too thin. But actually, other Mepharshim say it really wouldn't matter, because wherever you'd have more of a hefsed in using it for one purpose, say cutting down a tree in order to a fruit tree in order to use it for firewood, is not considered to be roy its eitzim for actual Berek HaBayit. It simply isn't worth it. So memel, it's not called gufo in that case, but the eitzim would have the value of the fact that they could be used for growing. So all of these cases, whether the part of it is kosher now in its own guf for the Mizbeach, or it's not kosher for the Mizbeach, but it's usable for the Berek HaBayit itself, or neither. It's simply zevel. Wouldn't matter, because in all of these cases, whatever the Hagdasha was, whether the Hagdasha was to use its guf on the Mizbeach, or the Hagdasha was to use its guf for building the walls of the Beit HaMikdash, or the Hagdasha was that the value should belong to either the Mizbeach, or to Berek HaBayit, as we saw in yesterday's sugya, that the Mizbeach can also have value. But that Hagdasha, for its purpose, creates the concept of desecration and embezzlement that is involved in Megillah. Remember that those are two different issues, because where something cannot be embezzled, so that it's the use of it, per se. It may be a non-Kodesh use, so it's a desecration. I'm certainly not hurting, let's say, a cup of Hegdesh to use one of the Kalim of the Mizbeach, and I take a drink from the water fountain. I'm not hurting the money in any sense, but I'm still engaging in a desecration. My act is worth a Shavar Pruta to me. It's no loss to Hegdesh. That's a type of Megillah. On the other hand, there may be things in which, how do you desecrate a compost? But the point is that I'm embezzling it in that case. So I'm using it up for purposes that are not Hegdesh. In any case where that is a violation of the original Hagdasha, it becomes an act of Me'ilah. Aval, im higdish bor v'achakach nitmalei mayim, or nashpa v'achakach nitmalei zeva. So somebody gives a cistern, and now it rains. The cistern becomes full of water. He did not give that water to Hegdesh. Now clearly, the water is owned by Hegdesh in the same sense that the milk yesterday was owned by Hegdesh or the animal. But it wasn't the thing that was given to Hegdesh. Or he gives over a site for compost. It's an ashpa. The ashpa means an area for ashpot. Or a shovach, he builds the shovach to attract the yonim, v'achakach nitmalei yonim. Or he gives an ilan, and now the ilan grows perot, v'achakach nitmalei perot. Or he gives the sadeh, but there's nothing in the sadeh now, v'achakach nitmalei asavim, and now it's become filled with various weeds, or whatever could grow in it. Mo'alim v'hem, v'ein mo'alim v'mashu betocha. In all of these cases, the thing itself that was given, there could be a me'ilah on, although we'll see that me'ilah, there's no din of me'ilah on it, something which is itself mechubar, and that's a little bit of a problem. Gemara will have to be careful to make sure that we understand what we mean by mo'alin, let's say, in a sadeh. But in any event, you can be mo'al, we'll see how, but not with what is mitmalay afterwards, even though it's owned by Agnesh, because again, it's not the thing that was mukdash. So it's not the ownership per se. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says, in the last two cases, where you have a sadeh and an ilan, over there, it's considered to be as if what grew is what was mukdash. Because over there, ha-magdish ta-sadeh va-ilan, mo'alin behem u-begidu lehen, מפני שהם גידולי הקדש. Where you have something which grows on its own, as opposed to the case of the water in the cistern that has to come from elsewhere, or the zevel that has to come from elsewhere, since it grew within the reshus of Hegdash itself, it's considered to be an actual result of the Hagdashah, and there is Me'ila on it.
Even if there was absolutely no growth from the
beginning. Right, that's right. V'lad ha-mu'useret. Now suppose you have a mu'useret. Now here this is Machlokas, because we're showing him how to learn. Rashi learns that what we're talking about over here is that you already had a child of this behema, and now you go ahead and you put this behema into the deer with another 9 behemot, and this mother ends up being the one that comes out from the opening, and this becomes now Asiriya Kodesh. But the child is, of course, chulin. It has no impact on the child. Now the question is, the child is still suckling. Is it allowed to suckle from its mother? Well, since the mother now is Hegdash, and we said the Chalav of Hegdash you cannot be Nene from, so in this case you cannot allow the Vlad to be Yonek Min HaMugdash. Furthermore, the same thing would be true by Vlad HaMugdashim. But what's interesting is that Acherim Mitnadvim came. There are some who up front, this is how Rashi is learning, who up front, when they make the animal Kodesh, that's in the case of Meiser, when it's allowed through, what they say is, look, I'm putting this mother into the deer Lihitaser, with the understanding that only the mother herself I am giving over to Maser, but I'm maintaining the Chalav, and the production of Chalav, to be still in Rishus of Chulin. Now that I'm not giving over to Hegdash to have any rights for. Or in the case of Mugdashim, it's the same thing. I've been giving Magdash to Behima, but I'm keeping the rights to the Chalav for myself. So over there, the Tanai would help, because after all, there would be ways to prevent, let's say, this Behima. I mean, even though you're not supposed to, all this is not the right thing to do, but there would be a way to make sure that it doesn't get to the gate in time to be the Mu'useret. So in such a case, I have a way around this by making a condition up front. So Acher Mitnadvim came. Now there's other Lashonas that it's talking about that the Vlad itself is of Hegdash. And nonetheless, you don't use Vlad of Hegdash. You don't allow even a Vlad of Hegdash to be, so to speak, at makrish, to lessen it takes something away from an animal when you're yoning from it, so it weakens it, and it makes it a little bit thinner, and so on. And therefore, the way to learn Acherim Mitnadvimken means there are good, kind people out there that will actually make an Edavata Hegdash to provide milk for a suckling animal in order that the mother should not be damaged, and you can have a full animal that's roy for whatever Hegdash wanted to. That's a totally different approach. Okay, there's two different ways to learn the Mishnah. Either this animal was chulin, the child, and remained chulin after the Hagdashah, or we're talking about even a Vlad of Hegdash, and Acherim Misnadvim means that they would give the milk for Hegdash's benefit. So to Vlad HaMugdashim lo yinok min HaMugdashim v'acher mitnadvim ki.
I think I'll follow back to your question. So if I only have a mother and a child and I makdash them both, I have no other source of milk, I'm creating a problem that the child could die or whatever if I decide to get to the shalim.
Sure, so then you have to make the arrangements to see to it that you have responsibility to get it to Hegdash. Whatever the case was, whether it's an alai, whether it's not very nogiris.
Would you ever a suckle from another mother, another animal that has some mother?
You mean you've never fed your baby a bottle?
A bottle.
Now, we have an interesting situation where the Torah, Dafka, was mechayev the rights of something to its work. We have two cases. In the case of a poel, a human poel, the din is that he's allowed to go into Kerem Re'acha. You're working on Kerem Re'acha, You're allowed to eat from the thing that you're working on. We find a similar case by Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, where an animal is working on Perot, and it's prohibited to seal it with a muzzle so that it can't eat. Do those dinim apply by Hekdesh as well? So a poel is working in a sudden Hekdesh. Now there it says, B'feirush et ha-pasuk, Sdei Re'acha. Re'acha means your friend's field. Clearly it's not meaningful in terms of Hekdesh, always when it says Re'acha, L'gabi Nezik, and many, many dinim, we darshan Re'acha v'lo shel Hekdesh. So that's not a problem. How about the case of an animal? It's Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho. Do you have a right or even a fiat where an animal is working b'shel hegdesh? The animal is your, they rent the animal in order to, you know, get their work done from you. Can your animal eat b'shel hegdesh? Or must you indeed muzzle the animal in such a case or provide it other food? Says the Mishnah that apoalim lo yochlu min hagro grot hegdesh. People that are working, let's say, in drying fruit for Hekdesh, are not allowed to eat the fruit that they're working on. Or a para is not allowed to eat mikar shine Hekdesh, from the vetches of Hekdesh, when it's working in that field. Now we'll see how we know the Re'acha, that maybe is obvious by the Po'alim. How do we know Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho? How do we know that that doesn't apply to Hekdesh as well? Now, katani v'lan ha-mu'useret lo yinak min ha-mu'useret. Minadimili, how do we know that there is actually an iser? Now, the way that Tosfos is learning, that it's talking about an animal of Hegdesh. Now, this question makes a lot of sense. That an animal of Hegdesh shouldn't be yoning from its own mother of Hegdesh. That's a pretty big finish. Here, the question of where did the other way of learning, where does the Torah say that even the things that weren't mugdash, that one would think are part of the normal nature of things, which if I give the mother, the chalav is still royal for the child. How do I know that that chalav, unless, the way Rashi learns, unless it's defined by Firush, otherwise with its nai, goes to Hegdesh? Omer about Tavoy Barami, look, the word, kol asher yavor tachat hashevet, that defines the dinim of Meiser, are always learned from the pasuk ve'he'evarta ko peterechem la'Hashem. Both cases use the word ha'avara. One literally, that they go through an opening, the ha'avara, the other figuratively, hand over, so to speak. Not literally to move them, but to give over the ba'alut, the b'chor should be given over to Hekdesh. From there we learn out that the dinim of Meiser, dinim of Hekdesh, b'chor, are similar. Now, just like a Bechor, by definition, everything in that Bechor is given to Hekdesh, because the Bechor doesn't have Chalav. So therefore, we don't need to distinguish between one thing and another. So, Ma Bechor Mo'alim Bo, in its entirety, Av Chalav HaMu'useret Mo'alim Bo, in its entirety. I gave, even though this is a Nekeva, and Nekeva also is in the Kvistas with Deer, it's no different than a Bechor. Chalav ha-mukdash, and how about mukdashim? I mean, maybe this is a special din in Maaser, which is learned from Bechor. No, I also learn mukdashim in general from the din of Shivat Yamim. By Bechor it says im imo, and by all animals where I magdish an animal to Hekdesh, it says Shivat Yamim tachat imo. That animal is not usable for the Mizbeach until 7 days have passed. But in both cases, it refers to a mother, a putative mother. I mean, it doesn't, obviously, as the Gemara Darshan tells us, doesn't mean literally that there's a mother there, but that there needed to be a mother at one point in that behemoth's life. And that imo, that strange lotion of imo, tells me that the din of mugdashim is similar to the din of Bechor. Okay, so this is now our makor. How about for the latter part of the Mishnah, in reference to the workers, hapoalim lo yochlu? Now it's interesting, the Gemara doesn't ask, how do we know hapoalim lo yochlu? Rashi says it's obvious, because I mean, anybody knows the pasuk, kerem re'acha cannot refer to Hekdesh. But how about the behemah? It doesn't say anything about re'acha over there by lo tachsom shor b'disho. So my taima, omer avak tavoy barami, the omar kra lo tachsom shor b'disho. Disho shel chav, lo disha shel Hekdesh. Now Rashi learned that since the whole context of that parsha that's describing now the Lo Tachsom is a reference to dinim in your own sadeh. It's all talking about chulin. So therefore we have a right to assume that when it says disho, it means the dayish that belongs to chulin, and not the dayish that belongs to hekdesh. Now, the Rambam learns that the meaning of the word disho is disha haru'il, haru'uyalo, and not disha she'ina ru'uyalo. Because what precisely does that mean? It's interesting, there's a beautiful Reb Chaim, a famous Reb Chaim, who's a classic Brisker Pshat, in which he answers the kasha that's brought here from Tosfos and the Shita Mekubetzes. The kasha is that the Gemara always learns out the dinim of the poel and the shor to be the same, because the human is the one who's chosein, and he's not supposed to be netzam himself. So as the Gemara puts it, we compare the chosein to the netzam. And whatever halakha applies to one applies to the other. If it says re'acha, why wouldn't that re'acha, by definition, explain now the netzam, meaning the shor? So lo taksom shor b'disho should follow directly once I know the din of poel.
Is there a
shor? Yeah, there the Gemara learns it out. The shaila is, and this of course would give a totally different explanation than Rashi. But Rashi is saying, look, the poel is given because everybody can read that pasuk re'acha, but the shor we have a problem with. Right? So Tosfos says, well, first of all, we shouldn't have a problem. It follows directly. And in fact, why does the Gemara need a separate pasuk? It works out even more powerfully according to Rambam, who learns that there's something about this disha that means ru'yalo. So Reb Chaim explains like this. The two dinim are totally dissimilar. Even though the halachas in certain aspects are learned from one another, because the halacha of the poel is a financial right that's given to the poel. That financial right is here not given, because it says b'kerem re'acha. There, in other words, it's simply defining, you're a workman, what rights does a workman have for compensation? One of the elements of compensation that is yours, that is granted to you, is that you have a right to eat. When it comes to the shor, that's also true. There would be no right to eat b'shel hekdesh. But there's a separate concept by the shor, which is a prohibition against preventing it from eating. That has nothing to do with financial rights.
Tzar b'alechayim.
Whatever is involved, we learn out dinim b'tzar b'alechayim from there. So the fact that the Torah didn't grant financial rights is indeed part of what is learned out. You're right, 100%. I cannot say that this thing that belongs to Hegdash is actually a schus of the para, and therefore it's okay to use it. It's not okay to use it. It belongs to Hegdash. The question is whether there's supposed to be an interference in the natural achila of the shor. And that comes along the pasuk to say, no, if there aren't financial rights, if it's not the disha ru'yalo, then there's no right to be un-Muslimming it either. Lo taksom shor bit disho, the disha bit, and not the disha, that's not ru'y for it. So this is a brand new halacha. A beautiful, simple analysis of what the Torah is saying. And we now understand what ru'y would mean. What do you mean ru'y la? Because if we learn out from poel, normally what it's eating is financially the shores. So what it's eating, it has a right to eat. Since over here it doesn't have that right as is given by the poel, so now the word b'disho would also tell me that there's no din of not muzzling it, because it doesn't have those rights.
B'disho means what the Torah says.
But Yishol
means the Daesh of the
Shor. Yeah, because it said B'Daesh. B'Daesh. Yeah.
But Yishol has to do with the owner of the
Yishol
of the
Shor. Yishol is the Shor's Daesh, we're darshaning. The Daesh that is meant to be its.
For the Shor.
Yeah. And since here it doesn't have that right, it's not meant to be its. Okay, so that explains how the Rambam deals with the Pasuk. Now, what's interesting is that it says, speaking of Daesh, Hadash, this lashon of Kal Inin is a very strange one. The Mefarshim Rashi, Tosfos, it's a type of kidneys, in the Mishnah, there's some gersos that have gal inim. Gal inim, in fact, is the word that's often used for type of kidneys. And you're doing a disha of these kidneys, these beans, in a sada of hegdesh. You're moel because you're using the sada for disha. I thought, well, betolosh bein. I thought the dinim of me'ila are limited to things that are not connected to the ground when you're using them. So how do you mechayev a person for me'ila on ground? You're simply using the ground. You're telling me I'm using the ground as a place to park my car in the Hegdesh's property. That's me'ila? Omer Avina, clearly that can't be the reason it's me'ila. Shmamina afka ma'alela. You see from here that in when it comes to gal ilin, when you do the disha, there's always a little bit of dust that settles over it. Apparently that dust is valuable in the disha process. It say dries them out, preserves them and so on. That's the part that you're going to be mail on. The little bit of the ground that in the banging process of the disha came off of the ground, was raised into the air, now it's tolush, now it settles back on the galinin. So there, you would in fact be mail on the afka.
This person that dedicated the field with
not just somebody else, said, whatever, was a field of hegdesh. Yeah.
Why is parking the car in the...
Why what?
Why is parking the car in the hegdesh plot? Why isn't that me'ila?
Because we learn out, as we'll see later, that me'ila is only where something was not mechubar to the ground. If it's mechubar to the ground, there's no din of a me'ila on it.
No bigger joy of finding a parking lot.
Yes, as we in the rope, I know. Ein lecha me'ila g'day lo mitzvah.
Does this shed light on behalf of Kohimo and the dust that's raised?
I don't know, but it sure works out for the Parshat HaShavua. You see that Afka is Malayla. The Medrash says that that Afka was the source of the Parnassah of Klal Yisrael for all the berries. So certainly Malayla. Let's see if there's any Ramazan in Kalinim, huh? Shorshe Ilan. Now here you have the roots of an Ilan Shel Hedyot. Haba'im B'Shel Hegdesh. And these roots have traveled far and they have now penetrated in the territory of Hegdesh. And now they're under the ground of Hegdesh. And the question is, if you actually cut these roots and you use these roots, what would be the din? You use them for firewood. Or shel hegdesh, shebaim b'shel hedyot. Or vice versa. You have hegdesh now, that the roots have entered into the rishos of hedyot. Now, halacha is, lo ne'anin velo mo'alin. There's no din of me'ila. However, it is osur b'hana'a. Now, apparently, the truth is that here our Gemara is not mefarish it. And because of that, the mefarshim leave it just to sort of a pshat. In other words, it's both goes bus of the Yilan and it goes bus of the Sada, and therefore we're machmer on it. But the truth is that the Gemara in Baba Basra forces an interpretation of the Mishnah in which you can't have it both ways. In other words, either you're going to go according to the tree, in which case if the tree belongs to Hedyot, then it should be mutar, and if the tree belongs to Hegdesh, it should be asur. Or you should go according to where you find the roots, in which case, if it's in the rishus of Hegdesh, it should be asur, and be mael, and in the Hedyot, it should be a mutar. So the Gemara there explains that the two cases are dissimilar, and that there is a 16 amma limit to the relationship of the root to the tree. In other words, once the roots travel further than 16 amot, they're not considered to be part of the tree any longer. And at that point, where I find them is what's koveya, the halacha. So if it would be in Hegdesh's Rishos, indeed it would be Hegdesh. But less than Sheshesrei Ames is considered to be according to the Ilan. And in that case, therefore we have to explain that the first case is talking about less than 16 amot. and even though there's more than 16 amas, and vice versa, because otherwise we end up with a stira. Okay, here we could just leave it. The Gemara here is relying apparently on the Sugim Baba Basra, not to get into the details. Instead, we make it look similar to the next case of a Mayan. Now here you have a well in which water is flowing through a Sada of Hagdash. Okay, you've got now water that originates maybe in a Chulin area, flows through the Sada of Hagdash, comes out now again in a field of Hedyot. So the din over there is that Mayan lo neniv lo mo'alim while it's in the field of Hagdash, but yatsa chutz l'sadeh neniv nimenu. Once it flows back out of the rishus of Hagdash, so there it's okay even lechatchila to be neneh from. It says the Rabbanon were gozer about using things that are in the rishus of Hagdash while they are there. Hamayim shebekad shel zahav. Now the halacha over there was, if you remember, there was a tzluchit shel zahav that was used for the mayim on Sukkot that we were menasech on the mizbeach. Shloshalugim. On Shabbos, where you're not allowed to carry the water, what they would do was they would put the water inside of a barrel that was made out of zahav, a large kad rather than a tzluchit, bring it from Erev Shabbos, but that kli was specifically not kodesh, because if it had been kodesh, the water would have become pasul belina. So they did not give the water kedushat aguf until it was put into the tzluchit. And that was done on Shabbat, and then the water was put on the mizbeach. So at the stage that the water is in the kad, in the chavit of gold, it's not yet kodesh b'kedushat aguf, and lo ne'anin v'lo mo'alim. They're not allowed to be ne'aneh from it, but there's no chiyuv of me'ila. But the moment that natnan b'tzluchit, mo'alim b'hem. Once it was put into the tzluchit, which was a actual kli of kli sharet, and was used to give kedusha aguf to the water, then you would be mole on that water.
Is there a balut like a bit of kabbalah? Who owns the water when it's
under? That's not the point. We've said many times. It's not ownership. It's koveya me'ila. I've repeated it today 3 or 4 times. It is very important to know that. It's not simple embezzlement of public funds or of kodesh's funds. It's misuse of something whose purpose was for a particular dedication. If the purpose was, in fact, its value, then it's a misuse of the dedication of the value. But the value per se is not koveya me'ila. This became clear, you remember, in the long discussion that Tosfos had in order to explain, as our dear president asked yesterday, Tosfos Kasha, in order to explain what is it about the chalav, if it's mukdash, why would it not have me'ila? It's yotze mitoch kol ha-sugya, that this is a very important yesod in me'ila. So there, once it's kodesh for the purposes of what it was meant to be utilized for, which is it's in the tzluchit, and it's going to be put on the mizbeach, then mo'alim b'hem. How about the arava, which immediately makes us think about the arava and Sukkot, obviously. I mean, we're talking about the mayim. So then we're talking about the arava that was put up against the mizbeach that they brought from Motza, the Murviot, and so on, and so on. It's interesting that the Rambam learns that an arava simply means where the Hekish owns the land, and then you have these crummy trees that are growing from it. You know, since it's valueless, it doesn't connect it to the Mayan, even though immediately afterwards the Mishnah reconnects it to the Lulav, which is amazing. So this is the Arava, lo ne'anin v'lo mo'alin. They used to put these up over the Mizbeach. At that point, it's basically Naset Mitzvata. It was used as a Chetzeshal Mitzvah, really, not a Chetzeshal Hegdash here. So when I did it for this Mitzvah, once the Mitzvah is over, it's no longer something that has Me'ilah. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tzadok Omer, it's more than that. Nolagina yu azekenim shene'anim imenu v'lulaveyhen. What they would do is they would take off branches, little branches from the Arava, to stick into their own personal lulav. Why? Because since mitzvot lav lehen notnitnu, you're not getting personal hana'ah from a mitzvah. So this chefza, which was brought to Hegdish to use for a mitzvah, a broader mitzvah of Arava, there's no violation in even taking it, parts of it, to use in your own personal lulav. Because even though it's your personal lulav, a mitzvah is by definition an impersonal act. It's given to the universe, and it's not considered to be a personal pleasure.
So that the Mikdash acquires it when these Aravas? It stays in the Rishus of the person gave them?
No, it is Shel Hegdash. Yeah, but since its tachlis is to be used for the mitzvahs of Sukkot, and there's no personal hanah that I'm getting, obviously I couldn't burn it in my fireplace before I did the mitzvah, then I would actually be moel. But over here, even before I did the mitzvah, it's not considered to be meneh from it to use it in my lulav. Omrei Shlokish, in moalim bekulan, aber moalim b'shalosh lugin. Now what it sounds like Reish Lakish is saying is that the reason that the Mishnah is saying that the water in the kad, before it's put into the tzluchit, I'm not going to be moalin, is because it's mixed with water that isn't meant to be used, because the maximum water that will be used is shlosh tzluchit, which fits into the tzluchit, and until I put it into the tzluchit, there's a lot of water here that wasn't meant to be used. But if I would use the whole thing, then three lugin out of it, I would be moalin, and I'd have to pay for that part, for the shlosh lugin. But that's a problem, says the Gemara. V'katani seifa, the seifa of the Mishnah says, natnu letzluchit mo'alin bahem. It's only once the water is in the tzluchit, which is certainly mashma, mechlal deresha, afilu b'shlosh lugin namilo. That it wasn't only a question of amounts, it was a question of where it is, and it wasn't the whole point. That until now I give it to Dushat Aguf by putting it into the tzluchit, and it's only in the kad that the din would be that I'm not moel in it. So how could Reish Lakish say what he says seems to run against the pshat of the Mishnah itself? He's saying out of the all of the water that's in that large container, shlosh haslugin, in fact, it would be moel. How does that work? Ela yidmar seifa, absolutely. What Reish Lakish was talking about was the last part of the Mishnah, where it says, if you put it into the tzluchit, you would be moel. Comes along Reish Lakish to say, Omer Reish Lakish, ein moalin ela b'shlosh lugin. Now this question of, you must have had a hard night, huh? This question of shlosh lugin is dependent on two issues. First of all, the issue that is called Yeshi'ur Lamayim or Ein Shi'ur Lamayim. And that is the question of, do I learn out the din of the Nisach HaMayim on Sukkot from the din of Nisachim of Yayin? The Nisachim of Yayin Revi'it Tahin is Shlosh Lugin. If I learn it out from that, and the basis of that would be the comparison that's made in the Pasuk of Unesacheha on the sixth day of Sukkot, usually it says V'niska. But here it says unisacheha, which is a lashon rabim, it's plural.
And it's libation.
Two different nisachim, two different libations, one which is wine and one which is water. So we would learn one out from the other. That's the first issue. Do we in fact learn out the yayin, the mayim from the yayin? The second question is, even assuming that we do, and that the shir is shlarshas lugin, if the container would hold more than shloshes lugin, the question would be, are klei sharet mikadesh that which is not ro'i lehem, or only the amount that is ro'i lehem? Those two issues are involved in this sugya. Now when Reish Lakish is saying, well, I don't care how much water you have in there, if you used all of it, it would only be three lugin worth that you would be moeling. So what he seems to be saying is, that there is no din of Kiddush Zaguf on anything but three lugin, and that's because three lugin, in fact, is the shear of the mayim that is used on a mizbeach, and I learn it out from the yayin.
The rest is chulin.
And the rest, it's not chulin, it's not Kiddush Zaguf la mizbeach. None of it is chulin. Chulin is a question of ownership. It's owned by Hegdish when it's put into the chavis. But it is not miyuchad lemizbeach to be kotche Hashem. The same issue as the chalav. Chalav is in chulin, but it's not miyuchad. So now, are you trying to tell me Lamaimer the Gesav Resh Lakish Yeshur Laman? You're trying to tell me that Resh Lakish holds that only three lugin are to be poured on the Mizbeah. It's impossible. But tonight we know there was a whole discussion about this issue, which Resh Lakish got involved in, which made it very clear that that is not Resh Lakish's approach. It says in the Mishnah like this, of our Rav Elazar, if somebody on Sukkot takes the water that was meant to be poured out on the Mizbeach and pours it out outside of the Beit HaMikdash on a rock to the Lord, it's the equivalent of having brought a sacrifice outside of the Beit HaMikdash, and he would be chayiv karet just as if he had brought a korban outside of the Beit HaMikdash. Comes along now, Resh Lakish. Sorry, the Amr of Yochanan, Mishum Menachem Yodfa'a. Reb Menachem from Yodfa'a said that, as quoted by Reb Yochanan, that this statement of Rabbi Elazar follows the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is Doresh the word Unisachea, is what it should say, which is using a Lashon Rabbim, and Rabbi Akiva says, Echad Nisuch HaMayim, V'Echad Nisuch HaYai, that the Torah here, everybody agrees, not only Rabbi Elazar, that if you would pour out the wine that's given all the time on the Mizbeach as part of the Korban, that certainly that is the equivalent of bringing the Korban b'chutz. The question over here is whether water has that same halacha of hakravah, or is it simply a din of something that you're supposed to do on the Mizbeah, but it's not also a b'shut echut, so to speak, by Allah's words. So now, Menachem Yotfa said that this sheet of Rebbe Elazar, that you would be chayav on the water as if you had poured out wine, follows the sheet of Rebbe Akiva, who says from the fact that the Torah uses a plural lashon of nisachah, it means that the Torah has now categorized the wine and the water as being similar. So if I bring wine outside of the Beit HaMikdash, clearly I'm doing ha'alat chutz. So too, if I bring this water outside of the Beit HaMikdash, I'm doing ha'alat chutz. So says Menachem Yotfa, as quoted by Rabbi Yochanan. To which Reish Lakish brilliantly replies, that's crazy. Because if you say that, then you would have to limit it to three lugin. Because if you're comparing the water to the wine, then there should be a bit of three lugin about the wine, about the water. And that's outrageous. There couldn't be such a din. Now, obviously, such a statement. So such a statement means that Resh Lakish takes it as a given that there is no shiur l'mayim. Otherwise, what's he asking? What's outrageous about it? Why not? Indeed, you're right. Three lugin. That's what he said over here in our Mishnah. So what the... He's claiming that our Mishnah is limited to three lugin. The only possible explanation of that is that he holds that there's a shear of the mayim of three lugin. But then, when he wants to attack Rabbi Yochanan's quote of Menachem Yotfa, he says, that's outrageous. That would mean that you only bring three lugin for the mayim. I thought that's what you hold. That's what you said. So what are you saying? This is the Gemara's kasha now. So Resh Lakish says, let's see it inside. I'm Resh Lakish. So then you'd have to say, Imai yayin shalosh shlugin, ab mayim shalosh shlugin. Doesn't that show b'chol the sof Resh Lakish ain't shir l'mayim? So it's clear that he holds that there is no shir l'mayim. And how do we explain that? Because he's not asking his own svara. He's asking L'tayma de Menachem Yotfa'aka Amar. He's asking on Menachem Yotfa'a, in which the lashon over there is that you're Mo'alim, Mashmi, or Mo'alim Bekulam. That's what he said. Mo'alim Bekulam. So, according to you, I'm saying you are contradicting yourself. I personally would agree that you could say this if you were limiting it to Shalosh Lugin, which happens to be my Shita anyway. I hold Yeshua Lamayim. But you who are claiming that there's a din of nisuch b'chutz without mentioning any shiur, apparently you don't learn out the mayim from the yayin. So how can you turn around and now say the same Menachem Yotva is going to turn around and say, well, apparently he's following the sheet of Rabbi Akiva that learns out the mayim from the yayin. That if you learned out the mayim from the yayin, you should have had to say Shalosh Lugin. But he himself, Enoch Inami, he does hold that Shalosh Lugin is the shir, which is why he says over here about the tzlufit, that you'd only be male on Shalosh Lugin. That's what I myself hold.
Couldn't you say that this is a question of Brera, since you don't know which three Lugin
were? You tried to took all the three. How much are you going to pay for it?
I'm just saying.
How much will you pay for it? No Brera.
Got it.
Wait. Shall we not do? You want to wait for the Mishnah tomorrow? All right, I'll let you learn. Barnea, thank you.
It's a Mazel Tov, but Eliyahu Zilberman, who says it's Rebbe,
he's
the proud father of Rivka
Zilberman. Proud father of what?
Somebody had a baby. Zilberman.